broadcast out of New York City. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, June 4th, 2012. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include vitamins that preserve fetal lungs in smoking pregnant mothers.
And Chinese tongue analysis is an app on your smartphone.
Boy, isn't that something? And how about revisiting vitamin D? Can too much be a problem, and how much is too much?
And now a study proves that exercise and a healthy diet extends life expectancy.
What about mothballs? They're pretty good for helping your clothes, but what do they do to your health?
And probiotics versus antibiotics for recurrent urinary tract infections, and much more.
All right, so if you want to join our conversation or you have some questions about what we're talking about, give us a call. The number is 888-874-4888.
We all know that smoking and secondhand smoke is harmful to our health, and we also know that it's very important for a pregnant woman smoker to quit because it affects the lung development of the fetus, and it can lead to asthma and wheezing, among other things. And it's turned out that only about 12% of pregnant women quit. So let's talk about this new study on vitamin C in smoking pregnant women.
Well, you know, vitamin C has been around a long time, and we humans don't make it. There are only a few species of animals that do make it. But it's one of our most potent antioxidants, and it does a lot of things to preserve wellness. We live in a balance between antioxidants and free radicals. If we have too much in the way of free radicals, we need more in the way of antioxidants to cover that. And vitamin C is one of the primary ways that we can do that. And what they did in this study at the University of California, San Francisco, is they looked at 159 women, and they were smokers, and what they were trying to do is see if they gave them vitamin C, just 500 milligrams a day, if that would make a difference in the risk of the offspring having some kind of pulmonary problem that could predict asthma or wheezing later in life. And indeed, they found that just 500 milligrams a day did a lot to lower that risk. So they measured the amount of damage there was to their lungs after 48 hours after they were delivered, and the results were kind of impressive. So you wonder if you should be doing anything that's different in a woman who's pregnant, because you don't want to either have malnutrition, but you also don't want to have massive overbalancing of any kind of supplement in particular. But 500 milligrams of vitamin C a day seems to do the job, so that's interesting, huh, Vicki?
I also thought that it was interesting to talk about here about the relationship of the smoker with cancer genes and the ability to quit smoking.
Well, yeah, we have genes that seem to predispose, that they alluded to in this article. They predispose to us having a need for using antioxidants or for protecting ourselves against these problems. So it's kind of an interesting concept. I like the idea of looking at some of the things that smoking does, because we're all pretty familiar with it, but a little quick review is not a bad idea. I mean, if you are smoking, your risk for lung cancer, you know, goes up substantially. And we've seen, since there's been a switch of men being primarily the smokers to women being more smokers, that the risk of cancer in women has gone up substantially in the last probably 30, 40 years. And then the problem with emphysema, everybody knows about, but it's a real thing. And we've all seen pictures of smokers who are so addicted to their tobacco that they're smoking through their tracheostomy tubes.
Well, the way they make cigarettes now, too, is different than how they used to, because now they have additives in them that make them more addictive.
There are thousands of additives that are in tobacco smoke that are problems for us. And when the tobacco industry, being business-minded rather than service-oriented, wants to maintain their business levels, what they do is they add things to it, and they don't tell us about it. And then we wind up with a very addictive problem. A lot of people have more trouble quitting smoking than they do things like methamphetamines. It's hard to believe. And some of the other things that smoking does are the heart attacks and strokes, because we know that it causes an increase in arteriosclerosis, which means that those plaques that form in our heart and brain and kidneys and other arteries can cause severe problems in terms of arterial blockage. And so the risk for heart attack and stroke goes up, and renal insufficiency goes way up.
And also with circulation, have you seen that ad that's on TV about the person who's holding out their hand that all their fingertips are gone?
Oh, wow.
And then it shows somebody else who's had amputations, and they say that it's from smoking.
Well, smoking adds to it. I mean, it would aggravate almost any condition you have. I would hate to see someone who has, for example, a peripheral neuropathy where the nerves are to your feet or hands are damaged smoking, because that would just add fuel to the fire. It's like pouring kerosene on a fire. And then lastly, osteoporosis. You wouldn't think much about that association, but it's real. And so all these things that smoking does, it's really a social thing more than anything else, I think.
Well, I kind of don't think it's as much a social thing as what it used to be. I mean,
That's true.
It was a social thing years ago because it was okay to smoke inside, and people didn't know that it was harmful secondhand.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, people have to isolate themselves and go outside to smoke and that kind of thing. But I think when you're talking about socializing, maybe for the teenagers, some teenagers, I don't really see teenagers walking around smoking where we live.
No, not so much, but they are smoking, there's no question. I mean, you go back to the 1940s, and you would see doctors in ads, in the magazines,
yeah,
even the medical journals, saying, "I'd walk a mile for a Camel," or John Wayne, you young people don't know who he was. One of the most famous cowboy actors out of Hollywood was a big smoker and, of course, died of lung cancer.
Well, back in the 60s and 70s, a lot of the doctors and nurses smoked and would, take smoking breaks and all that kind of thing. So anyway, things have changed. So if you have any questions about your health and you'd like to give us a call, the number here is 888-874-4888. If you've ever been to a Chinese traditional doctor, you know that they've been looking at our tongues for like 5,000 years. And Western doctors do also, but it's mostly just to have us stick it out to say, ah, so that they can look at our throat. I mean, they might. I don't know. You're a doctor. Do you look at the tongue much?
Well, it's right there. It's kind of hard to avoid, but I wasn't.
Well, mostly you want to get it out of the way.
Well, that's really right. It's kind of an odd way of looking at things, but the big point you're trying to make is that what happens is in Chinese medicine, they're paying attention to a lot of things like what's the color of it? Is it pale? Is it deep? Is it a beefy red?
Does that have a coating on it?
Sure. Or what kind of shape does it have? Does it have scalloped edges? Does it have what we call a geographic tongue, where there are areas where the papillae on the surface of the tongue have eroded, and you see these like little patches that look like mothballs or moths got in there and started eating.
Yuck.
And so we need to be open-minded more so in Western medicine about how we look at healthcare issues and how we're going to examine them. We get so preoccupied with just doing the things we learn in medical school. And that's what? That's just looking at drugs and surgeries and technologies and looking at only from the point of view of the anatomy and physiology and biochemistry of what's happening. But there are many disciplines out there, not just Chinese medicine, that are really important to look at. And about, I guess it was about 20, 25 years ago, when you went through all your health problems, Vicki, that I started getting much more interested in disciplines besides the one that I had learned in medical school. And so we started an organization called the Health Medicine Forum, where we got together with people of all different kinds of disciplines, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, Native American medicine, homeopathy, looking at all kinds of electromagnetics. And the education that we've had over the last couple of decades has just been staggering. And I have to admit, it has really changed my attitude about where medicine fits in the grand scheme of things.
Well, who would have thought that tongue analysis could be so important for prevention? Because evidently it can warn you of a disease. I mean, they can tell from looking at your tongue if you have a stomach problem, if you have H. pylori, gastritis, and so forth.
Well, they can tell a lot. They measure something called Zheng, Z-H-E-N-G, which measures the overall physical status of the body. And that gives you clues that something's going wrong, and the particular patterns that you see in that analysis of the tongue give you clues as to what you should be looking for in terms of what disease process is starting. So it's a great way to assess, you know, where you are with your health.
So now the University of Missouri is developing this software as an app on our smartphones to take a picture of our own tongue, and then you can learn the state of your health.
Well, I think it's great that that's there.
So now it'll be smile and stick out your tongue.
Right, rather than say, ah, and put your tongue out of the way so we can see your throat. I mean, there's some really...
No, but I'm talking about when you smile on your camera, on your smartphone.
Yeah,
you know?
Out comes your tongue, right. Well, these are things that are going to help the American public to shape the way that we practice health care. I mean, it shouldn't just be Western medicine that rules the roost, because if it does, then we have an aggressive system that, while it can do some unbelievably magical things to save lives, it's also, because of its complexity and lack of information that we have that's detailed enough, it also causes a lot of deaths. So it's not like it should be the first choice that we pick when we're looking at what kind of health care are we going to do. It may be better to be the last choice. I have a kind of an order that I look at things to determine how I move forward with any kind of approach to diagnosing or treating a condition. And I think the first thing always is lifestyle, because it's your most powerful and your best medicine by far. But when you're looking at things that are a little bit more aggressive, then you move to non-invasive therapies after lifestyle. So things like Chinese medicine or chiropractic would be things to look at. If that doesn't work, then you get aggressive and do things like vitamin pills and minerals and supplements and herbs, natural things.
Yeah, that's real aggressive.
Yeah, that's a joke, actually. And then lastly, you look for the aggressive things like what we do in Western medicine. So this business of the app for Chinese tongue analysis is a good one. Of course, it was published in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine, which is a journal. So it's kind of interesting.
So, moving right along to our next topic, do you have problems with moths? If so, you better find a better alternative to mothballs, because naphthalene, which is the main ingredient in mothballs, is a type of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon, which is why it's abbreviated PAH, and it's a carcinogenic toxin, and it's found not just in mothball fumes, but in urban air and car exhaust and tobacco smoke and paint fumes and cooking, like especially with wooden coal stoves. So tell us about the new research on children's vulnerability when exposed to high levels of naphthalene.
Yeah, well, scientists got together and they started looking at what naphthalene did. And so they got 113 kids who were aged 5 years old, and they measured their naphthalene excretion in urine. And what they found was, of these 113 kids, 30 of them had chromosomal aberrations, which in themselves doesn't necessarily mean cancer. But it certainly does mean that they're at more of a risk for it. And then 11 of them had more severe changes that are called translocations, where the genes or the chromosomes actually split and and put themselves back together in an abnormal way. And that's associated with a pretty much increased risk of developing cancer. So this whole business of mothballs using to try and get rid of moths is great for killing the moths, but we should keep in mind that anything that will kill anything else may not be good for us too, particularly if it's not something that's natural. So we have all these problems with pesticides and herbicides and mothballs and all kinds of things that become issues that we need to pay attention to. So I think if we keep things natural and we don't use some of the things that are conventionally done until we find out there are problems. I mean, look at the pesticides and herbicides and the kinds of effects that they have on our metabolism. I mean, we find out after the fact that we've got something that we really have to worry about, and then we go, oh, we better take that off the market. And there are thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of chemicals that we've made in the last 75 years that are relatively untested. I mean, it's a shame that we get like that. But anyway, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health or you want to join in on our conversation, give us a call. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
So the mothballs seem to be a problem, and I think that we ought to talk a little bit about some alternatives, some healthy alternatives to mothballs.
That's a good idea.
Well, one of them is to have a cedar closet. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows that, but not everybody can have a cedar closet. But there are cedar chips, and nowadays I've seen these round discs that you can
little
put
balls.
Over.
Yeah.
No, they're not a ball. They're a circle that's flat like a disc, and you stick it over the head of the of the hanger.
I've seen them in balls too, where you just put them in the drawer with your phone.
Oh, yeah. Certainly.
And there's a natural way to do it, huh?
Yeah, and you want the cedar that smells, that you can smell, because not all cedar smells very much, and that's called juniper. And then yesterday I was horseback riding, and I was noticing all the bay leaves, you know. Well, bay leaves are another thing that deter moths.
Hmm.
And cinnamon sticks, that
really?
Smell, yeah, those smell good. And you can actually make your own sachets, and you can include things like, you know, the cinnamon, I guess, and the bay leaves, but you could also add lavender and eucalyptus and cloves.
Oh, all those things smell good, too.
And peppercorns.
I like that.
And wormwood or dried lemon peels.
Really?
So you don't have to use all those things together. You can use any of those things, or if you wanted to, you could make up the sachet. And it's, you know, I was thinking last night about this, because usually they recommend putting these, making a sachet with cheesecloth.
Oh.
But lately I've noticed that whenever you buy jewelry, a lot of the stores will give you little bags that are mesh that have a little tie at the end. Why not just use those for putting your sachet in?
Well, it would have more ventilation, more room for the air to get in and to get out, which is what you're after, right?
Yeah. So go for the healthy things, the bay leaves, the cinnamon sticks, the lavender, eucalyptus, cloves, peppercorn.
Right. How much naphthalene is in those things? Zero.
So that's a healthy choice, and they smell good, too.
I think it's amazing at how we just assume that if something works, that we should go ahead and give it a try. Like the mothball thing or the pesticide thing we were talking about. It's just silly that we don't pay more attention to those kinds of things, because what we've invented is a sea of pollution that we now live in that is causing all kinds of problems, not just for us, but for our planet.
What we need to do is go back to the olden days. Those are the things that they did, and they found that they were helpful. Nowadays, we just rely on chemicals for everything.
Well, that's because somebody wants to promote a product because it makes an income. And the goal of our society or our culture is to be rich. You have lots of comfort, lots of things. And, of course, what we're looking for is the things in life that don't cost a penny that we forget about. It's our relationships with one another. And it's our connection to the planet. It's our reverence for the universe and being respectful of it and being part of it and considering it as part of us. It's being in love with people. I mean, all those things, they don't cost anything, but that's where the real joys in life come. So it's kind of ironic that whoever made the universe made it right, and all we have to do is adapt to it. And yet, as we develop as human beings, we get all these funny ideas from the rest of the culture that lead us to do things that are just a disaster.
Like Adam and Eve in the garden.
Well, yeah, you could go back as that example. I mean, who the hell needs an apple anyway, right? I mean, an apple a day may keep the doctor away, but in those days, it was not exactly what you wanted to consume. And we do the same kind of behavior in so many things in our life. that we wind up geared to make as much money as we can. We look at the value in society as who has the most toys, who has the most security financially. And I can tell you, as a practicing doctor for about 40 years, that when people come into my office, say they have money or don't have money, there's still a huge problem that they're coming in with that they haven't resolved. And we need to go back to the basics and remember why we're here. You know, at the moment of conception, what happens is we have the merging of a physical essence with a spiritual essence. And that allows us on planet Earth to have a body to house our spirit that keeps us in communication with all of that's in our environment. Because think of the senses that we have. We can see and hear and taste and touch and feel and do the things that we can do. And what does that accomplish for us? It allows us to be in communication with other forms of life, with each other. And so if you look at this thing in a teleological sense, which means look at how we function and then go back and try to figure out what our meaningful purpose is, I come to the conclusion that it's about relationship. Because all the senses that we have allow us to communicate in various ways with our environment and with all the living and unliving things that are in it. And so if that's the purpose, then maybe we should be spending more time embellishing those relationships so that we live them in a way where we're getting some return on our investment for being present, for being on the planet. And remember that what we were given as our gift is the ability to communicate, but also the gift to be in the moment. So that if we're in the moment, we're extracting the most that we are offered by the universe. And if we don't spend time in the precious present, as Leo Buscaglia would say, then we're blowing the reason why we're here. So if we keep that kind of philosophy in mind, it'll remind us of what is our message. I mean, what is the message to us?
You know, there's a new TV program now. It's something about the millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it last night, and they had a millionaire, multimillionaire, and his daughter that were on. And they were going around trying to decide which organizations that they wanted to donate to.
Uh-huh.
And they were just sort of like taken and dumped into this area that
uh-huh.
was more like kind of like a ghetto.
Uh-huh.
And they were only allowing themselves to spend $71 a day, which is what I guess people get from welfare. And his daughter said she was used to spending $68 just to get her nails done or something. But anyway, they went around and they lived just lavishly on their own. But here they were living in a kind of a dump of a house for a week and doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end, when they started giving the money to some of these different organizations, and they were crying and the people were crying, and he and his daughter had become so much closer, and they just felt so wonderful to be able to give. And then
yep.
they, to see what it was like on the other side, because they had just come from affluence,
mm-hmm.
you know. So you're so right about it. It's like what comes from the heart. You know, Oprah Winfrey has done shows like that too.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's given things to people, and it feels so good to give and to do for others.
No, she gave away a car to everybody in her audience one time. I mean, that was unbelievable. All these people were especially invited who needed a car. So
yeah, but she's also done things for people that really did, yeah, that really
for sure.
did need whatever it was. Like one time she had a show where there was a fellow on the show not just one, there were several of them, and they were like CEOs or owners of big, huge companies, and so they would pretend like they were just a new worker,
uh-huh.
and the people that they were working with had no idea
who they were. Yeah.
And they got to know what they were like, and then at the end, they gave a lot of them promotions and stuff, and it was
uh-huh.
just really fun to watch because they were so, you know, moved in their hearts,
uh-huh.
as well as the people that they helped, and everybody was sloppy crying and
yeah,
everything,
well,
you know.
Well, so it tells you that it's not what you make, it's not the conveniences, it's not the kind of car you drive or the house that you live in particularly, or the food.
It's your soul.
Well, it's how you express it, you're right. And we get more joy out of giving, sharing, loving people unconditionally than we do when we're more narcissistic, self-centered, and have all the modern conveniences that we get when we live our lives in this world. And we need to go back and reassess that and begin to live more in community where we're supporting one another, rather than this world that we live in now in this country, which is disintegrated into a miserable mess. But what better teacher could there be than to experience this and find out how this doesn't work? It's incredible to me at how many people are out there trying to take advantage for their own personal gain, their own narcissistic needs, what they perceive as needs, rather than learning about the joys of connection and support and love and community. The philanthropists really are the ones who learn this in the end, that it's about what they can give, not so much what they have. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question or want to contribute to our conversation, is 888-874-4888. And we're going to go to calls now. We have a call from Alan from Brooklyn. Hi, Alan. Are you there?
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay. I'm hanging in there. A few weeks ago, I called and I explained about this hematoma that I had on my foot that never healed.
Uh-huh.
And I believe it was DSMO that you recommended.
It's DMSO, and it stands for dimethyl sulfoxide. That's why we abbreviate it to DMSO.
Well, the thing is, I went to a vitamin shop in Brooklyn, and they told me they don't carry it because it's too toxic, and I could get it for a vet from a veterinarian. And also, I was wondering while I have you on the air, you told me about this, I believe, a Dr. Perlmutter that gives glutathione injections, but he's all the way in Florida, and he's very expensive. And I was wondering, my doctor recommended that I take phlegelin hydrochloride for my tremors. And I was wondering your opinion on that. I was very shocked when they told me what they told me about DSMO in the vitamin shop.
Well,
and
let me help you with that, Alan. Well, sure, I can tell you a lot about DMSO. Here's what it does, first of all. It's an anti-inflammatory agent that's very potent, and it helps quench or to react against free radicals. And it also is a carrier, which means that if you put something on the skin and you have DMSO on it, it will speed its progression across into the body. So it will transport things from the skin into the body. Now, shops like Vitamin Shop don't want to take responsibility for you doing things that might be silly. For example, if you had some kind of chemical or you're working with a pesticide or some kind of toxic thing and it's on your skin and you put DMSO on it, it would be toxic for you. But if you clean the skin first and then put the DMSO on it, you'll get the anti-inflammatory effect from it.
That's why if a woman was using it, it wouldn't be smart to use it with nail polish on, because some of it might get on the nail polish and then it would go right into her bloodstream.
Right. So if you know what you're doing, and Vitamin Shop can't be sure that you do know what you're doing, and if they sell it to you, there would be a liability there that they don't want to assume. And I think most health food stores are like that. They don't want to assume that responsibility.
Well, you can get it online, and some health food stores do carry it.
Yeah, and you have to keep in mind that we don't recommend it for anybody because we're not your doctor, but we want to tell you about it so you can work with your doctor or your healthcare practitioner to use it wisely.
Okay.
So it would be a very good thing, in my opinion, and for my patients who had a hematoma that wasn't resolving, that would be one of the first things I would do. The next thing I would do is I would use some infrared light, because I think that would help to speed up the healing process and relieve the pain immensely.
And what about the phlegelin hydrochloride?
You can do things like that, but there are problems with phlegelin that I think if you just Google, you'll learn about.
That's why I'm asking, and I really don't want to take it, but I've been taking 2 tablespoons of coconut oil.
Uh-huh.
I've been taking glutathione. I've been taking this herb called macuna. And I still have the tremors, but...
Well, the problem you have is probably not going to be resolved by that, but it would be a good thing to make your nerves as healthy as you can, and supporting them with the things that you just mentioned is a good idea. And if you go to drsaputo.com and you put in some of these items, you'll learn about what they do and how they work. So, Alan, thanks for calling. It's always good to talk to you. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from Tony from Queens. Hi, Tony.
Hi, good day. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's up?
Yeah, okay. Quick question. Urinary tract infection and enlarged prostate. What do you recommend?
For what would you do for a urinary tract infection that comes from the prostate?
And prostate enlarged.
So you have a urinary tract infection in the presence of an enlarged prostate. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Okay. How old are you, Tony?
50.
60? Okay.
Five.
And how many times do you have to get up at night to urinate?
Like 3-4 times.
Okay, so, and the stream size is quite a bit smaller?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, you have a point, and that's that the enlarged prostate will predispose to obstruction, and when there's obstruction, it predisposes to infection. So you may want to do something to improve that enlarged prostate, and there are a few medicines that work pretty well in the mainstream that you could consider. You could try something like saw palmetto and Pygium. These all usually come in preparations you can get at your health food store, although I have to admit that some of the more recent literature has not shown that it works that well. But then we have 50 years of studies before that have suggested that it does, so that would be one thing that you could do. If you wanted to go the medical way for a prostate problem, if you had an issue with obstruction and you're getting up all the time and you can't sleep, there are drugs like Hytrin that work, or Cardura, that work pretty well to relax the sphincter.
Could you spell that?
Yeah, Cardura is one, and Hytrin, Hytrin, is another. And then there are other drugs that you can use that, like Proscar or Avodart, that also can help that, but that needs to be done under the supervision, obviously, of a physician.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a lot of things you could think about.
Thank you. We're
going to be talking later in the show, so if you may want to stay tuned about the use of probiotics in this setting, although for men it wouldn't be that much. But in general, probiotics are very interesting, particularly for women who have recurring urinary tract infection. So I hope that helps you, Tony.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
There's some new research that suggests eating raisins as an after-school snack prevents excessive calorie intake and increases satiety, which is a feeling of fullness.
We all want that. So you eat a raisin and you're not hungry anymore, huh?
Well, not one, probably, but anyway, they compared them to some other commonly consumed snacks like grapes and potato chips and chocolate chip cookies.
Well, there's a big difference there. Maybe put a raisin in your chocolate chip.
Well, when eating raisins, they did the study on kids, so they consumed significantly fewer calories when compared to those other snacks. And their desire to eat was lowest after they consumed the raisins also. And this is the first controlled study that looks at after-school snacking and, you know, how satisfied the kids are and how full they feel after they've eaten. And I was looking up raisins, and some of their top sources of antioxidants, potassium and fiber. And I always thought that they were high in iron, but actually they do have a little iron, but they're not what you'd call high in iron. They are high in carbohydrates, but you know, it's a natural sugar. And a quarter of a cup of raisins, which is equivalent to 130 calories, is equivalent to the same as one serving of fruit. A lot of times people don't think of that when it comes to dried fruit, because you know, actually raisins are dried grapes.
Yeah, right.
But another thing I was surprised about was, because I was thinking the sugar content in them, even though it's a natural sugar content, might not be good for a person's teeth. But guess what? It reduces dental caries by decreasing cavity-causing bacteria.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Isn't Mother Nature amazing how she packages things together? It's sort of like the fructose that's in it. It's toxic to our bodies in a lot of ways, and yet when it's packaged with fiber and the antioxidants, it's good for you.
Yeah, when you eat the whole fruit compared to just drinking the juice.
Exactly.
Well, another thing that I thought people might be interested in knowing, because, you know, pacifiers are pretty toxic when you think about it with the plastic and everything.
Yeah.
And my grandmother told me that when she was little, or when her sisters or when her kids were little, they didn't have pacifiers, so guess what they did? They put raisins in a cheesecloth, and the baby would suck on that, and then the baby would be quiet. Well, they're pretty sweet, you know. And then I was thinking about all the ways a person could use them, because they're healthy and they help to fill you up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, a lot of times you see raisins are in bread and cereals,
mm-hmm.
and you can even add them to things like beans and rice and tuna and sauces. And I know a restaurant where I love to go where they have this spinach that's sautéed with garlic and a little bit of balsamic, and it's got raisins in it.
Oh, boy,
and
that
it's
sounds
so
good.
Good.
Is it time for lunch?
<That sounds
real good. laughs>
And it's also good in desserts. Everybody knows that. But I thought a recipe that sounded kind of fun for a kid is to take an organic tortilla and spread it with peanut butter and bananas and raisins and roll that up.
Oh, that sounds great.
And then they're good in salads and chicken and pork and with ham and,
uh-huh.
and other vegetables and, you know, and put them with peanut butter instead of jelly, which is not a very healthy thing to eat. So
I always think in my trail mix. I like more raisins in the trail mix.
Yeah, and in cereals too. Oh, and another thing is when I make the oat groats, I also take a handful of raisins, which is probably about a quarter of a cup.
Uh-huh.
And I don't eat all of that together, but it's just in the whole pot that I'm making. But I soak those raisins overnight. So
that's delicious.
Yeah, so it plumps them up, and it kind of almost makes them sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that, too, is soak them ahead of time if you want.
Well, that's a great tip. Love it. Mother Nature is fantastic. All we got to do is work with her. And so we do all these what I will call creative, destructive things where we don't test and we're more interested in making money than we are in providing a service. I mean, everybody's interested in the wrong things. You know, we keep coming back to this thing about lifestyle and how important it is to have some kind of idea of why you're here. And that's why I always include in lifestyle our meaningful purpose in life. I mean, what's it about? So many people, they get to retirement age and they go, I never want to work in that place again and I'm going to retire. And then a couple of years later, they're dead.
I was talking to a neighbor when I was at the post office the other day in line. And he was saying, people need to have a plan before they retire.
For sure. I mean, so much of our life is centered around income so that we can, quote, have the best things in life for our kids. But in fact, they don't get the best things in life if we just give them the material things. I mean, look at the wealthy families that are sending their kids off to special schools. And they don't have a mother and a father that's there to raise them, to give them the nourishment and all the instruction they need by example. It's not the way that we are going to get the best thing from our lives. It's about looking at a sunset. It's about being in the wind. It's looking at the clouds that go by, or enjoying the sweet rain in a forest, or all those kinds of things that really do a lot to connect you with nature and to connect you with one another, and then to work together in community for the purpose of what? You know, to making the village that you live in work.
You know, I had an experience yesterday with a friend and her little boy who's about 7 years old, and
mm-hmm.
he was kind of afraid of the horse and didn't want to get on the horse, so we decided that we were going to ride and he was going to walk.
How long did that last?
he had more fun walking in nature, and he was so enamored by everything. We were talking, he was walking next to me when I was on my horse, and we were talking about the flowers and
yeah.
the trees and the bay leaves, and I'd pick a bay leaf off and tear it in half and tell him to smell it. And then we came across some other things, you know, that he found so interesting. But all of a sudden, because at first he was kind of pokey and kind of pouty.
Yeah. We had to walk.
And he was running and laughing, and he was just having the best time. And then he found a ball, and then a dog came, and he threw the ball to him.
Sure.
And he was just having a wonderful time. And then on the way back, then he rode. Then he was tired. And then he really liked it.
Last night.
And then he liked it. And he's like, oh, yeah, this, because I kept saying to him, isn't it beautiful? Isn't this great to be in nature? And look at this view over here and there. And
well, see, Vicki, you still have a lot of child in you, which I think is one of the most beautiful things about you, is because you get present and you're playful and you enjoy life that way. I have this image of a four-year-old little girl looking at a bee on a flower and just totally engrossed in it, looking at it and concentrating on it, and mom says, Susie, it's time for lunch. She doesn't hear a thing because she's looking at the bee and she's looking at the flower and she's really connected in the moment. And that's what we give away a lot of the time, particularly with our jobs, especially if we don't like them. And a lot of the jobs, how could you possibly like? Because they're really not that exciting, and they're not something that you want to be connected with. And often there's a lot of pressure, and there are people giving you a hard time. It's not the way life should be lived. It should be lived to the fullest in the moment with things that you enjoy. And it's not about becoming a certain kind of having a certain kind of occupation. You don't need to be a doctor or a lawyer or a president or an Indian chief. What you need to be is somebody who's spending time with something that interests you, that in somehow can be of value to your community, so you can be part of making it a better place to be.
And you'll end up being healthier in the long run.
Too right, because what you think and how you feel has a profound effect on your biochemistry and physiology. We know how good exercise is for us. We know how good it is to be in a happy mood. We know how those endorphins will all start to be produced, those feel-good chemicals that our bodies make when we're doing things that we enjoy. We also know what it's like to be depressed and to feel low and to have no energy.
Well, see, this is my thought about yesterday was when I saw this little boy that started out, he was crying and he didn't want to go and everything, and pretty soon and he'd been at a swim meet all day, so he was tired.
Yeah.
But he was like running and laughing, and I thought, boy, isn't it interesting when somebody's interested in something?
Exactly.
When somebody's more motivated.
So what happens then? You get your gold watch or your whatever it is you get at age 65. You're retired, and then you're going to go to the golf course, right? And you suck at playing golf anyway because you never had enough time to practice it. And then you're frustrated with that. And then it's what skills have you developed as a person, as
well,
a human being, in your relationships?
Well, see, the thing is that people want to play golf on a vacation or they want to play once in a while. But
so that's good for a few weeks or a couple of months. But after that, is life all about playing golf or playing tennis?
I guess it is for some people.
Well, that's sort of like where they wind up. And I don't think that's necessarily such a good place to be. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, Tony called us earlier about urinary tract infections.
Uh-huh.
And there is a need, you know, for non-antibiotic treatment of urinary tract infections.
Absolutely.
With antibiotic resistance rampant from the overuse of antibiotics.
Uh-huh.
And although probiotics are not quite as effective as antibiotics, they work just about as well without the side effects or creating antibiotic resistance. So what do you think is the goal of this recent report on probiotics versus antibiotics for urinary tract infections in elderly women who get urinary tract infections?
Okay, well, this is an article that was published in the May issue of this year of Archives of Internal Medicine. And what they really did is they took an antibiotic, either Bactrim or Septra. They used a sulfa in combination with another drug. And they compared that to the effectiveness of using a probiotic, okay, just an oral probiotic, because oral lactobacillus, believe it or not, restores the vaginal microflora to a place that's healthy. And in urinary tract infections, a lot of the time what happens is that the flora in the vagina gets in the urethra, and it goes back up into the urethra and causes an infection. So if you've got the wrong microbes that live there, then, of course, it's going to put you at risk for developing the infection. But if you have the right microbes there that will crowd out the bad bacteria, then over time what's going to happen is that those bad guys won't be there to go up the urethra and cause the infection. And you can also do it, whether you do it orally or you can use an intravaginal probiotic. They make those now, too, that are used for certain kinds of vaginal infections, which make an awful lot of sense when you think about it. It's like taking a probiotic if you have a problem with a yeast infection in your bowel, or you have C. difficile, or you have some other infection.
Well, then you take it by mouth.
Well, yeah, you take it by mouth for sure, because it does so many things to maintain a normal ecosystem in your gut and in the vagina in the case of a woman. So what they did in this study is they took 252 postmenopausal women who were having recurrent urinary tract infections, and they compared the effect of taking a probiotic over 12 months to using these antibiotics every day. And I can tell you the difference was minimal. The incidence of infections in the women on probiotics went from 6.8 on the average to 3.3, so that's a tremendous improvement. And the antibiotic went from 7 to 2.9. So the difference is only 0.4 of an infection per year in these people that are getting an average of 7 infections a year.
And plus they're exposing themselves to all these antibiotics. They're
right.
Taking them every day.
Now, you know what hacked me off is this dumbass article talks about probiotics and antibiotics, and they're saying, well, antibiotics are better, so you should, and they implied that you should do that.
By 0.4 of a case?
These morons that are unwilling to look at the value of non-toxic, non-invasive, healthy approaches to managing infections, rather than using an antibiotic, which is what? Anti-life, antibiotic, rather than probiotic, which is for life, just makes so much more sense. Why not do what's natural rather than expose yourself to all the potential infections? Because antibiotics kill people. They cause a massive change in the microflora of the intestinal tract, which is one of the most metabolically active places in our body. And there are lots of good things that ecosystem does to protect us from getting sick.
Well, you know, there are other alternatives, too, or things that can be helpful if somebody has a urinary tract infection.
For sure.
That one of the things that I didn't know about before reading this article was about estrogen for women.
Uh-huh. Well, if you have atrophic vaginitis, the ecosystem in the gut is apt to be ruined and changed, and there will be an overgrowth of microbes, and you could wind up...
In the gut? You just said in the gut.
I mean in the vagina.
Yeah.
Well, I get them mixed up, I guess. I'm talking too fast. And so that's something to pay attention to.
Well, the other thing are cranberries. Everybody knows about drinking cranberry juice, but you probably need a little more than just cranberry juice, maybe the cranberry extract.
Cranberry extract in the form of a capsule or a tablet is the best way to go, and I think what we should use. Keep in mind that what's in that cranberry extract is a sugar that's called D-mannose. D-mannose is not metabolizable by the body. We can't metabolize it, so it's a safe sugar. And what it does, you can take it by mouth, and it will go into the urine because it will be excreted there, and there it coats the microbes. Okay, that shouldn't be in the bladder or the urethra that caused the infection, so they can't stick to the walls of the urethra or the bladder anymore. So they wash out. A neat way to use what Mother Nature came up with in a lot of foods that we can eat.
And then what about vitamin C?
Another good antimicrobial agent. I mean, take a couple of grams a few times a day. And that will do a lot to reduce the number of microbes that can live there. I remember talking to Bob Cathcart, who was Linus Pauling's protege in vitamin C. And he said that he had done some studies where he put E. coli into a solution and various different strengths of vitamin C he'd add to it. And he said it was amazing at how the vitamin C killed the microbes that were causing the infection. And because it's passed out into the urine when you take it, it's actually concentrated there, you put an awful lot of vitamin C into the urine, it's going to do a lot of good. In fact, I remember back in the 60s being an intern and having one of my senior residents tell me, if you can't get rid of this infection in people, try a little vitamin C. And they said, take a half a gram or a gram.
And why not just try that first?
Well, it depends on the setting. You've got a really bad infection, you're probably not going to want to rely just on vitamin C because you want that sucker out of there.
Yeah.
When you can't pee because it burns and stings and there's blood coming out and you're miserable and you have to worry about the infection going up into your kidneys and causing pyelonephritis and fever and chills and all that stuff and sepsis, I mean, you probably want to be a little more aggressive. But if it's not a big problem, like it isn't a huge problem in these postmenopausal women that often have infections and don't even know it because they're asymptomatic, little probiotic, not a bad idea.
And then also, what about saturated solution of potassium iodide?
That can work for an acute infection, but you know, SSKI, it's called, is something that affects the thyroid gland, and it can suppress the gland, or it can actually make it overactive. So
probably not such a good thing for chronic.
No, but if you're going on a camping trip, always take SSKI with you because it has so many applications that can be useful, including infections, even colds. Because what you wind up with is liquefying the mucus that's in the chest or in the sinuses, so that it can do a lot. And of course, there's a lot of talk about SSKI now that the Fukushima thing is a big deal, but you don't want to just jump in and take SSKI to try and protect yourself from what's coming across from Fukushima now because of the effects that it has on the thyroid gland. So if you were going to use it long-term because there was a problem with prolonged radioactivity, then you'd have to take it with a little desiccated thyroid. So I would take like a grain a day along with a few milligrams of SSKI to solve that problem. It'd be a very interesting way deal with that kind of infection. So it's not infection, but that kind of toxicity. So the whole business of lifestyle for me is such a big deal because it's such a non-invasive way of supporting good health. See, in Western medicine, what we tend to do is we take an adversarial stance. We want to kill the microbe. We want to fight the cancer. We want to do something to not allow the artery to be plugged up if you're at risk for a heart attack or a stroke. All these things are an aggressive stance, and we should be supporting what we're doing the way that we are with our lifestyle, because that's safe and it's way more powerful in the long haul. It's the most potent medicine we have. If you had a pill that did what lifestyle did, it would be a blockbuster. Anyway, thanks for joining us. I want to remind you to go to drsabuto.com. That's our website that's 100% free. You have to join. That just means you give us your email address. But you don't pay 1 cent for any of the 33 health assessments that are there or for any of the other information on the site. And it's got 2,000 audios and videos that Vicki and I have made that are tailored to answer your questions of whatever kind of healthcare condition you have when you take the assessment. So I want to thank you and remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and on drsabuto.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived at drsabuto.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics that we discussed, you can go to drsabuto.com and check out our Fast Track videos located on drsabuto.com under Radio. Although they're in video.
Yeah, right.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week.